Welcome to another exciting episode of the Staying Golden podcast, where you can catch a glimpse of the journey after Laurier through interview sessions with Laurier alumni. We would like to acknowledge that we're from Laurier University and its campuses are located on the shared traditional territory of the Neutral, Anishinaabe, and Haudenosaunee peoples. As usual, I am your host, Ayonfe Ayene, and today with me I have Mirko Petrusevic. Mirko earned a Master of Theological Studies degree from Laurier in 2014. When he started the MTS program, he was working as a full-time religion beat reporter with the Waterloo Region Record. By the time of convocation, Mirko had pivoted to work in corporate communications. After a brief stint as a communications coordinator for Laurier's arts faculty, he joined Lothar as a communications coordinator and eventually director. Most recently, he served a stint with the City of Kitchener as a senior communication strategist. He is now focusing on advocacy work with Ink-Stained Wretches, a pro-democracy volunteer advocacy group he founded in 2020. Ink-Stained Wretches is working to build a culture of appreciation for quality journalism. Mirko, it's so nice to have you in the studio today. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you very much, Ayonfe. It's terrific to be here. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the conversation that we're about to have. The first question that I have today is, you have a very interesting journey from, a religion beats reporter to your current role as the founder of Ink-Stained Wretches. Yeah. Can you just walk us through the journey and key milestones, as well as how your experience at Martin Luther University College led this transition from journalism to corporate communication and eventually your advocacy work?
Oh, sure. Definitely. My transition from journalism to corporate communications and advocacy work is very much intertwined with Luther and my time at Luther. And actually, the timing was such that I put in my very final assignment. I handed in my final assignment at noon on one day, and at 4 o'clock I showed up for my shift at the Record and learned that my colleagues and I are the copy desk, where we would come in the evening. We would write headlines, we would edit stories, we'd put together pages. We learned that the copy desk was being moved to a different location, and that we were being transitioned or laid off. I could have been at the Record long enough that I could have moved into another role, back to doing general assignment reporting, which I had done for years before that. But that was really the start of my transition away from journalism into corporate communications. And the one thing that I'd like to say about my education at Luther, it gave me the confidence to be a little bit countercultural. And I don't mean that in a way that I was an anarchist or a rebel or anything like that, but in my own social circle, it gave me that kind of confidence, because as a religion reporter, I was not religious myself. But after working in religion for about 4 or 5 years as a reporter, I started questioning my own faith. It had been decades since I'd gone to church or thought about faith. And it's a difficult place to be a religious person in a secular newsroom. My education here gave me confidence in that immediate term, in the medium term as a communications strategist and communications director, and today as the chief instigator of Ink-Stained Wretches.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting journey. So after your master's at Luther, you started as a communications coordinator with, Laurier Arts Faculty, and then you went on to become the director of communications at Luther.
Yes.
So, I was just wondering what, key experiences you gained from these roles at Laurier that you have taken even to future roles that you've, been involved in.
I think my learning at Laurier happened in conjunction with other learning, learning on the job, whether it was at the Record or learning on the job as a corporate communications person at Luther. Because I'm always doing professional development, always learning. And I think that's an important thing to keep. I need to do that to keep myself interested and to be able to serve. Because journalism, people don't think of journalism as a public service, but it is. Working at Luther was a public service. Working eventually at the city of Kitchener was a public service as well. So the things that I learned at Luther and the confidence that it gave me also gave me confidence when I was working in responding to situations that arose in the communications field at Luther. For example, I think maybe one of the biggest takeaways from my time at Luther was to have the confidence to do your research and have the confidence in putting forth a plan that that you believe in. For example, in 2020, when I believe it was 2020, just going by memory here, when George Floyd's murder happened, then many corporations, schools, everybody was asked to make some kind of a statement. I'm not sure what it was like where you were mm-hmm. at the time, but here in Kitchener in Canada, there was pressure for corporations to speak up. So what was Luther's response going to be? And we talked about it, and we could have put out a statement. One thing, the principal dean at the time invited people to read a Martin Luther King Jr. Speech, to go back to that and read that. But what we did that did was right away, we had decided that we were going to see what we can do, not just say, but what could we do to maybe help the situation. And we found that a coalition of advocacy groups in the United States had started a hashtag Stop Hate for Profit campaign. And they were asking people to suspend their advertising with Facebook and Meta products because they felt that Meta wasn't doing enough to regulate speech, to regulate racism, the spread of racism and discrimination on their platform. So we went through a long process of researching other platforms and came eventually to about a year and a half later to the point of restricting the amount of activity we had on Meta products. We didn't have a large advertising budget. But that was kind of countercultural because at the time everybody felt they needed to be on that platform. We chose a balanced response at that time. We decided not to quit it completely because there were things that we needed to do to use metaphor to reach students here at Laurier. Mm-hmm. For example, with a food distribution program that Luther was running in conjunction with Ellsberg. So we chose what we needed to communicate, how to best serve the students, and we use that platform for that, and not just as a blanket platform. Mm-hmm. And that was our way of responding to the Stop Hate for Profit project. Now that's, at the time, and especially for somebody in communications, that's countercultural. Now you have your experience as well recently with social media. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think especially with my generation, counterculture is something that you kind of have to embrace to an extent just to make sure that, you know, you're using social media in the right ways. Mm-hmm. And I think some ways that I have been counterculture is just like sometimes just taking a step back from media in general, maybe just taking like a 1 to 2-3 month break from social media in general, just to make sure that I still have a grasp of reality. Yeah. And you know, just from your experience at Luther, it's just kind of heartwarming to see that, you know, we're not just using advocacy for profit. It's nice to see that yeah. there are still institutions that are passionate mm-hmm. about, you know, doing their research and not just putting stuff out there for attention, for thumbs ups, for, you know, mm-hmm. engagement. You're still doing action to make sure that there are, you know, a change in society. So
I think yeah. it's difficult. And students, when they're alumni, people in general, it's difficult to align values and actions, especially mm-hmm. when there is something so culturally powerful like social media mm-hmm. to limit that. I think it's very, very difficult to limit your use of that. When you did your experiment of social media break for a month, what did your friends say? Did they think that? What did they think of that?
My whole career surround social media a lot.
Yes.
So to see that I could take that break was kind of just an inspiration to them as well. That,
right.
Yeah, it's okay to take a step back, even if this is what you do for work.
Oh, great. And did your time at Laurier sort of bring you to that decision to take a break after a while? Or?
Yeah, I think because I'm in the Faculty of Arts, I'm studying film right now.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that has been constantly emphasized, especially in my faculty, is, you know, critical thinking.
Yes.
Because a lot of the things you consume, films, media,
different
things affect your thought processes.
Of course,
so you have to be very critical. And I feel like one of the ways you can be critical is to actually detach yourself from media in general.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that, yeah, my learnings at Laurier has a part to play in me being countercultural in a sense towards my engagement with, like, you know, various media forms.
Okay, terrific. No, that's great to hear.
Yeah. So just shifting focus a bit now to your role as a senior communications coordinator at the City of Kitchener, right?
Senior communications strategist.
Strategist, my bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so a lot of students recently have been interested in roles about, you know, communications and how to get such roles.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering, what skills would you say made you successful in such a role? And what skills, like, would you advise people looking to get into communications to amass in their early career stages?
I think there is a number of skills. I mean, to be successful in a communications role, there are a number of skills. Of course, there are the basic skills of writing or video content creation, editing, those kinds of things. And especially with writing, because in writing you can get your thoughts in an organized fashion and communicate them in an organized fashion. That communication happens also when somebody receives, not just when you broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can tell your story, say your piece, in a way that people can understand and they receive it, your communication is successful. Now, one of the things that I didn't think of when I made the transition, how important it is also to have project management skills. Because in this field, especially at the City of Kitchener, I found that you have multiple projects that are kind of all these balls in the air at the same time. And every project has a different group of people that you're dealing with, that you're working with, to make a project successful when you're doing promotions for a particular project, or when you're just trying to use communications in a way to improve the business bottom line, to improve the business success, whether that's getting more students or getting the word out to people who are in a neighborhood that's undergoing some kind of redevelopment project. But that project management skills and being able to multitask, I don't think that's a difficulty for your generation as much as it is for mine.
Well, I think it comes naturally to a lot of us because,
mm-hmm.
you know, from a very early stage, especially at Laurier, you get involved in clubs,
yes.
you hold positions, you're managing people, you're managing
yeah.
multiple projects.
Mm-hmm.
And just so naturally, you
yeah.
start to learn, you know, some of those skills that help
mm-hmm.
you to manage products. You know, effectively.
Yeah.
But even with that, I think it's still very important to be intentional about
mm-hmm.
learning about project management. Maybe it's taking
yes.
a course or, you know, just
yes.
putting in that extra effort to make sure that you actually are, you know, successful in a communications field.
Yes, definitely. Because when you are in a professional atmosphere, you have other people that you're working with who have taken those courses,
mm-hmm.
Who do work in a certain systematic way.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're working with them, it helps for you to know their language.
Mm-hmm.
It helps for you to know where they're coming from. It helps for you to know that communications, even though that's your whole world, it's not their whole world.
Yeah.
That it's a piece of their whole project. So I think that's an indispensable skill that people can take. And I think your point of volunteering with different groups
mm-hmm.
On campus
yeah.
is helpful. I think that is valuable experience, definitely valuable experience. And also you get to learn how to work with different people
mm-hmm.
and in different groups, and learning you know, various skills that'll help you when you are in the professional world.
Yeah. Now that we're just talking about, like, you know, volunteering positions and
mm-hmm.
whatnot, I'm just wondering if you had any experience with that, you know, during your time at Laurier, did you volunteer, or how did you get involved in the community here?
To be frank, I did not get involved in the community here. And partly that is because I was an older student when I began. I was in my early 40s. Mm-hmm. And I had a spouse at home. I had a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And it was also part-time. The experience was part-time. Mm-hmm. So I would parachute in for an evening class. When it was done, I was gone. And I did this over about 7 years. I took one term where I took off work, and I had three, four courses at the same time. But generally, I did not get involved in the community here, and which is a contrast to my earlier graduate degree in journalism. About 10 years earlier, in my early 30s, I went to Western and was in the journalism program there. And I took a year off work, and I went full-time to school. And I was able to connect more with my students, my fellow students. I was driving to London every day, so I didn't get involved in any activities there, really. But I still have friends from that program. Mm-hmm. Whereas my program doing part-time at Laurier Luther, mm-hmm. I have no connections there from those times in that school, because there just wasn't the time and the proximity mm-hmm. to do that.
Yeah. And would you say that affected your time at Laurier in any way? Would you, like, if you could go back, would you do things differently, or is it just the way things had to be?
I think it's the way things had to be at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just because I was covering the religion beat at the time, mm-hmm. which was a responsibility that I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I think out of my 30-year career at the Record, the time that I spent doing full-time religion reporting was the best stint that I had. I started off as a photojournalist for 10 years, then went back to school. I got my journalism degree, then I was doing both photography and writing until the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. But it's not a beat that I wanted to take a break from, because one, I was enjoying it so much. Two, when you're covering a beat, I mentioned that journalism is a public service, and I felt responsibility to the readers that I not take a break, because after about 5 years of working full time, I had accumulated the knowledge and the contacts in the community that I could serve the community better than somebody fresh coming in. Mm-hmm. So no, that's I wouldn't have done anything differently with my studies at Laurier. Unfortunately, that's just the way it was
yeah.
at the time.
And that's totally understandable. And so now you're the founder of Inkstained Wretches, which yes. is a cultural advocacy group for quality journalism, I believe.
Yes.
Could yeah. you share a bit about what led to, bringing this together sure. and, you know, what this is about, really?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. The journalism in the last 15 years in Canada, not only in Canada, but in the States and in the Western world, in democracies, has suffered from a real nosedive in advertising revenue. And the great bulk of that has gone to online, it's gone to Google and Meta. And what that means is that there's been, just in Canada, probably about 300 local news outlets that have gone out of business, which in about 200 communities in Canada. That's significant. That means that in 200 communities, people don't have their watchdog looking out for them. They don't have the people looking, keeping an eye on what's happening in government, what's happening at the police, what's happening at businesses that might be polluting or abusing their power in some other way, or even university administration. You know, the journalism is a check on power. Mm-hmm. And it is essential for a healthy democracy. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people don't understand that. They don't make the connection. And I think for many years, when you're in the journalism industry, you see it, you know it. You not only do you see outlets closing, but you see the ones that are surviving greatly diminished. Mm-hmm. There would be, at one point when I worked at the Record, there would be a beat reporter for the universities, the Catholic school board, and the public school board. And you know, slowly, because over the last 10, 15 years, those numbers have dwindled. It's just much more difficult for a local news outlet to serve the community. Why? Because they don't have the money from advertising to spend and invest in journalism. So this is when we were in, we could see that when I was working in journalism, but making the shift to corporate communications, doing communications work is just like journalism is communications, but when you see the corporate communications field, it's different. You can look at maybe the bigger picture and get a sense of how you might be able to move the needle and persuade people to certain actions that you think will advance your cause. And in this case, the cause is quality journalism. We strongly believe that we need to help rebuild quality journalism in Canada, as other groups believe in the States. Mm-hmm. How do we do that? It's going to be very difficult. Because culture change is difficult. It's going to take many years. But the way it started, if you want to know how it started.
Yeah, for sure, definitely.
The way it started was, so in early 2020, when the pandemic lockdowns were announced, the newspaper industry was suffering for already quite some time, probably a decade. And I knew, and a group of former reporters and newsroom workers at The Record knew also that it was going to be tough on newspapers. But we saw a little window of opportunity to make a campaign, a public advocacy campaign. And this is something that I thought of because I was in corporate communications at the time, that we could possibly ask local councils to pass motions that would urge the federal government to bring about regulations and legislation that would ensure an ecosystem for a healthy news ecosystem, for a healthy news industry in aid of democracy. So what we did, we understood that municipal politicians, for the Waterloo mayor, Dave Jaworski, I first saw that he retweeted and supported a journalist in Denver who was laid off because of the pandemic lockdown. I had never seen before a local politician, or any politician really, endorse journalism in that way, in that public of way. Yes, many cooperate with journalists and are great with journalists, but in this way I hadn't seen before. So it's a window of opportunity that maybe we could ask municipal councils to endorse local journalism, professional journalism, the way that they endorse other things, such as declaring a climate crisis or a climate emergency. So after a bunch of research that I conducted and my colleagues, we'd came up with a plan. And we first came to Waterloo Region Council with this motion, and they passed the motion. They actually strengthened the motion. And because the mayors of the other municipalities in the region sit around the council table, we approached them as well. After about a year and a half, we were able to get 29 municipalities across Canada, from St. John's to Vancouver, in 9 provinces, home to 13 million people. These councils all considered and passed motions and endorsing local journalism, professional journalism. So that was really the start of Angst and Wretches. And since then, we've moved on to a couple of other campaigns. We wound up that campaign, but now we're doing, right now we're in the middle of a campaign. It's our third year to May 3rd. The United Nations has declared May 3rd every year as World Press Freedom Day. So this is our third year that we're running a campaign to go to municipalities and ask them to somehow recognize, have some kind of civic recognition for World Press Freedom Day. And first year we started with mayoral proclamations. Mayors proclaim World Press Freedom Day in their area. First year, I think we had about 15. Last year, we expanded that to illumination of illumination of whether it's City Hall or a bridge or and flag raisings as well. CF Kitchener doesn't do proclamations, but they allow community flag to be raised. So last year we raised a United Nations flag on May 3rd. And then we can, this is a way that we could get on the radar of local community leaders and promote world press freedom at least one day a year, get it on their radar and make it a conversation piece. So that's those are two campaigns. The one's wound up. This one, Civic Recognition Campaign, is still going on. And then the third one is our journalismfilmfestival.com.
It's very inspiring to see someone that's still fighting for quality journalism in our world today. And as a filmmaker myself, I'm very interested to hear about the journalism film festival that you're going to be hosting. So can you share more about that and, sure, how people can get involved?
Yeah. Sure. Well, just a little bit of background. The first year that we ran it was last year in 2023. And I just wanted it to be an event where former journalists can get together and feel good about journalism for a change, because often the news about the news business is not that good. So what we did was we hosted four films over 4 months. It was the first Tuesday in March, April, May, and June. We held that in downtown Kitchener at the Apollo Cinema. And we ran some classic films, sort of All the President's Men, and Network, and Whiskey Tango Foxtrot with Tina Fey, just as a little bit of a lighter one. And the very first film was on Writing with Fire. It was a documentary of women Dalit journalists in India who are transitioning from a paper to an electronic format. And the courage of these women was just amazing. These women journalists were great. So this year, what we've done was we're changing the format a little bit. We're, instead of running four films, we're going to do one film. It'll be a Sunday matinee, partly Sunday because that gives people from out of town a chance to get there. Tuesday evenings was very difficult for people to come to. Even though our attendance was great, I wanted an opportunity for people from out of town to be able to join us. And so we'll run one film, and that film will be followed by a panel discussion. And that panel discussion will look at the question, how might we build a culture of appreciation for quality journalism? As simple as that. So we'll have a panel of diverse people, diverse disciplines, and we'll explore that.
I'm excited to see how it pans out. And yeah. Now I'm just wondering, we spoke a little bit about how we're in this age where the media landscape is constantly evolving.
Yeah.
So what would you say, organizations like Inkstained Wretches and, the campaigns you run, such as this film festival, how does that, help this constantly evolving media landscape? And how is it going to help people, adjust to it?
Well, one thing I think what we try to do is we try to get it onto the radar of leadership and influencers, people who have the ability to create this and feed this ecosystem for healthy, quality journalism. We're getting the issue on their radar, and hopefully we're affecting their actions in a positive way. And I think also we're hopefully getting it on the radar of the general population. As I mentioned, it's difficult for many people will consume quality journalism, but few people want to pay for it. There's very few people who have a subscription. Subscriptions have dropped quite a bit. And so people want the information, but they're reluctant to pay for it. However, the same people are paying subscriptions to Spotify or Apple Music or Audible Books or a number of other online services. People are getting more used to subscriptions. Why not new subscriptions? I'm not sure. But we're hoping to nudge them in that direction, to point out the value that journalism brings to a community and bring them to the point that, maybe this is something we're paying for, because it is a community watchdog that we're paying for.
Mm-hmm. Even on my end, I acknowledge that sometimes I overlook the impact of journalism in the society, but I'm very grateful for this conversation because I feel like it's the much needed eye-opener that I needed to, you know, kind of just draw me back to acknowledge, okay, we actually do need this for democracy to be successful.
Indeed. Yeah. Any thoughts on why maybe people are reluctant to, you know, pay a couple hundred bucks a year for a subscription?
Honestly, I'm not too sure. I think it has a lot to do with the, you know, the rapid growth of social media and people finding information in, you know, alternative sources that are free. Because, you know, something happens in the world and you open TikTok and someone has made a video about that. So you're like, why should I pay for, you know, a newspaper subscription when I could find information on TikTok? But sometimes the information you find online is not, you know, there's no fact check on this. You're not sure that this is actually real. And so it's really just an eye opener, like, okay, we actually need to watch what we're consuming and where we're getting our information.
I think so. I don't think people understand that as a journalist, if I didn't get my facts right, I could be reprimanded, you know, to the point of being fired if that was a recurring issue. I mean, everybody makes mistakes, but there are repercussions when you're looking at a quality journalistic outlet, news outlet, traditional news outlet. Generally, there's a set of standards and there's repercussions, you know, for somebody putting their opinions on
TikTok.
On TikTok, there's not the checks and balances. And I think... I don't know. I'm hoping that people appreciate the difference. At this point, they don't know the difference, I think. Many people don't. So we're trying to sensitize them to that.
Yeah. You're doing amazing work.
Thank you.
So just before concluding the interview, I'm going to ask you one final question that we're asking all our guests this season.
Okay.
So if you could give advice to your younger self, you know, you coming straight out of university, what would you tell your younger self?
Okay, straight out of my undergrad. Let's do that, because I was in my early 20s. It has to do with fear and gratitude. It's like, don't be afraid of trying something new, about opening yourself to opportunities, to try. I think a lot of people suffer from this imposter syndrome. This is something that's fairly, you know, part of the zeitgeist now, people trying to overcome their imposter syndrome. I think a lot of people I'm not a naturally confident person. And so it was difficult to make those steps. And that's what Luther helped me with when it came to, at least in my faith life, to gain that kind of confidence. That has followed me since then. But I think so, the one piece of advice is fear not, you know, just open yourself to new opportunities. And if you don't know, you're not 100% prepared for it, that's great, because then you'll grow, right? And gratitude is the second one. I think we all need to feel gratitude for what we have each day. I mean, we are some university educated people are some of the most privileged people in the history of the earth. And I think we sometimes forget that. And so that gratitude, if every day, if we can tell ourselves that how lucky we are, how fortunate we are, how blessed we are, I think that will go a long way to making the world a better place. Because when you feel gratitude, there's a bit of humility in that, and it's not all about me, right? It gives you space to realize that I'm not the product of just what I've done. I'm the product of many inputs and help from many people. So I think that's two pieces of advice. I know you asked for only one.
You can never have too much advice. Thank you so much for sharing. Those are two really great things that you should, you know, integrate into your life. For our listeners right now that are, you know, interested in your advocacy work and, you know, what you're fighting for, what would be the best ways for them to connect with you and, you know, just follow your journey?
Yes. If you go to online, we have a website. It's ink-stainedwretches.org. You can do that. And there's a link there for email. You can send me an email. Or you can go to journalismfilmfestival.com. That goes to the same website, but specifically to the film festival page. And I'm not sure if I mentioned the date. That'll be Sunday, April the 28th.
Okay.
And we're still working on finding a particular title.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to journalismfilmfestival.com or ink-stainwretches.org, you can get a hold of me and find out what's going on there.
Yeah, and I'll be sure to put those links in the description box just to give people, you know, ease with finding that information.
Thank you.
And with that, we've come to the end of the interview. Thank you so much for sharing your incredible journey and work with us. It was really nice having this conversation.
Thank you very much. I'm grateful for being here and for your offer to join you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And to our listeners, we'll see you on the next episode. Bye for now.